Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for holding, and welcome to the IMCD event call regarding first half year 2021 results. At this moment, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I would now like to hand over the conference to Mr. Piet van der Slikke. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and welcome everybody. I'm here with Hans Kooijmans, as always, and together we will answer your questions on our results over the first 6 months. The strong demand which we reported after Q1 continued in Q2 to such an extent that our EBITDA grew with 46% over the full 6 months, and even with 52% on a constant currency basis. Cash earnings per share increased with 44%. All regions contributed to this organic growth, and all acquired companies performed in accordance with expectations. We remained active with executing our strategy by acquiring companies in various regions and market segments, and we strengthened our position in Mexico, Colombia, Central America, and China. I want to thank our staff who delivered a remarkable performance under difficult circumstances, and we look with optimism to the remainder of the year. Now Hans will take you through the first half year numbers, and after that we will answer your questions. So Hans,
go ahead. Pete, thanks for the introduction. Morning, ladies and gentlemen, and I would like to start on page 9 of the presentation, where you will find a summary of the first half year income statement. As you can see, Forex adjusted revenue increased 23% and gross profit increased 28% compared to the same period of last year. This 28% gross profit growth was a combination of 9% as a result of the first time inclusion of acquisitions and 19% organic growth. Gross profit in percentage of revenue increased 0.9% compared to last year to 24.5%. And this increase was a combination of the contribution of newly acquired businesses, product mix effects, changes in local market circumstances, and successful internal gross margin improvement initiatives. Forex adjusted operating EBITDA and EBITA both increased with 48 and 52% respectively. This increase was a combination of strong organic growth and first-time inclusion of acquisitions. Operating EBITDA in percentage of revenue increased to 12.3%, and operating EBITA in percentage of revenue increased with 2.2% to 11.5%. The conversion margin, calculated as operating EBITA in percentage of gross profit, improved substantially to 46.8%. When using EBITDA instead of EBITA as the numerator, when calculating the conversion margin, like most of our peers, we would have reported a 50% conversion margin. On the next page, page 10, you will find gross profit, EBITDA, and conversion margin per operating segment. In EMEA, we report 19% forex-adjusted gross profit growth and an operating EBITDA of 93 million versus 70 million last year. The EBITDA margin of 11.6% is 1.4% higher compared to the same period of last year, and most of the EBITDA and gross margin growth in EMEA was organic. In the Americas, we also report double-digit gross profit and operating EBITDA growth, respectively by 18 and 24%. Operating EBITDA in percentage of revenue improved 0.6% to 10.3%, and like EMEA, most of the growth was organic. In Asia Pacific, we realized 80% gross profit growth and more than doubled EBITDA. Operating EBITDA in percentage of revenue improved 6.4% to 15.8%. This growth was a combination of substantial organic growth and the first-time inclusion of acquisitions like Signet, a pharma business in India that we acquired end of last year. In all segments, we report substantial improvements in conversion margin compared to the same period of last year. And this improvement in conversion margin is the result of substantial organic EBITDA growth, whereby organic gross profit growth more than compensated the own cost growth. Further, the positive impact of the Signet acquisition helped to improve this ratio. In the last column, all non-operating companies, including the head office in Rotterdam and our regional support offices in Singapore and the US, where we report slightly higher costs, mainly as a result of further strengthening of support functions in these offices. On page 11, a summary of the P&L lines between operating EBITDA and net result for the period. A few general remarks. Net finance cost reduced significantly, and I will show a breakdown in a minute. Income tax expenses increased and relate to the countries where we generate taxable income. The tax cash out in the first 6 months was about 25 million. Amortization of intangible assets are mainly non-cash costs related to the amortization of supplier relations, distribution rights, and other intangibles. And last but not least, as mentioned already by Pete on the bottom of this page, you could see a Forex-adjusted 48% increase in cash earnings per share to €2.43. As promised on page 12, a specification of the net finance cost, where we report a decrease of 7.3 million compared to the first half of last year. Main driver of this decrease is 1.8 million positive currency exchange results this year compared to 3.2 million cost last year, reducing overall finance cost with 5 million. Further interest cost of our loan structure were 1.6 million lower than the same period of last year. On page 13, a summary of a balance sheet. Property, plant and equipment of 96 million is a combination of a limited amount of fixed assets that we own ourselves and more than 70 million right of use assets. In other words, capitalized operational leases as a result of the application of IFRS 16. The combination of intangible assets on the one hand and related deferred tax liabilities are a result of acquisitions done since July 2014 and our history as private equity-owned company. On the financing side, there is 817 million of debt and 1.3 billion of equity. This substantial equity position covers about 62% of our capital employed. The leverage ratio end of June, based on our loan documentation, was 1.6 times EBITDA, which was well below the maximum set in our loan documentation. Reported leverage, based on IFRS, was 2.6 times EBITDA, and differences in definitions of what is real debt between IFRS and the loan documentation are the main reason for the difference in these two leverage ratios. Working capital at the end of June is summarized on the next page, where you will find a summary of the absolute amounts of the various working capital components, and these absolute amounts translated in days of revenue. As you can see, the absolute amount of working capital end of June increased with 84 million compared to year-end 2020. And this increase is a combination of additional working capital due to the increased business activities, working capital that we added as a result of acquisitions in the first half of 2020, and currency changes on working capital positions. Compared to last year, June, the overall working capital days improved and decreased 4 days from 60 to 56. I would like to finish this short summary with a cash flow overview on page 15. Free cash flow and cash conversion ratio were both substantially higher than the same period last year as a result of increased operating EBITDA combined that more than offset the higher working capital investment as a result of the increased business activities. Further, CapEx was about 2 million lower than last year. Then I assume that you all read our outlook on page 17, the outlook in the press release, in which we expressed our expectation of EBITDA growth in 2021. And I would like to hand over to the operator to open the lines for Q&A.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session now. If you have a question or remark, please press star 1 on your telephone. So star 1 for questions or remarks. Please go ahead. And the first question is coming from Rajesh Kumar, HSBC. I'm going to connect you. Please hold the line, sir. Your line is
morning.
Open now.
Morning. First of all, when you look at your financial gearing, it's now at 1.6 times as per the loan document. This is lower than your typical range. Clearly, there are opportunities in the market. So could you update us on how you're thinking about your acquisition pipeline? And how are you seeing the valuation trend in that area? The second question is obviously on the performance. You have done really strongly. A lot of people are worrying that, you know, chemical prices have been a tailwind. So could you help us understand how much of it was cross-selling new products in different geographies versus, you know, pass-through of higher freight cost and price increases, and which of those will reverse in the second half when we are, you know, looking at our forecast? What are the things we need to be cautious on? Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Rajesh. On your first question, acquisition pipeline, basically what we always say is that we continue to acquire businesses that fit into the strategy. It's clear that also in this time we have been able to do that, although of course it would help if we could travel again. We're very positive nevertheless about the possibility to acquire companies also in the future. And not sure if you want to say anything on the gearing, Hans, but...
No, I think the conclusion is right, that the 1.6, according to the loan documentation, is low compared to what we reported in the past. On the other hand, I think the market also looks at the IFRS leverage, the 2.6 time, and we all should realize that in that leverage there's, for instance, also earn-out obligations. There is the debt related to the operational leases that we have to put on the balance sheet. So the 1.6 is should be more relevant, but I every now and then doubt if the market sees that the same way. But there is plenty of potential upside to do M&A there.
On your second question, volume, price, cross-selling, yeah, that's of course a mix, and we're not going to totally try to dissolve this mix or analyze this mix. It's clear that the current result is the sum of all three. There's significant volume growth, significant price increase, and of course, we always are trying to cross-fertilize our business in terms of bringing new product lines of existing suppliers or new suppliers to new regions. And that remains a very positive trend. As to how, let's say, volume growth and price growth will continue, yeah, nobody knows. For the time being, the remainder of the year, we remain positive. But it's a combination of the three of these factors. And for us, of course, it's very important to continue to develop our business in the different market segments and to add product lines to offer a complementary product range. And I think what helps us is if we enter new territories, for example, now in Central America, that we are able to also use our relationships, our supplier relationships, to bring new product lines to these regions or to take them over from competition. So it's about strongly executing our model. Stay close to suppliers and customers, and of course being able to also pass price increases to the market. So I would summarize it as in this way, Ajis.
Understood. Thank you.
And the next question is coming from Matthew Yates, Bank of America. Please go ahead, sir. Mr. Yates, please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Maybe just to follow up on one of the prior questions around the margin development we saw sequentially, and maybe just leaving Asia to one side, given the Signet deal, but very, very strong margin expansion in Europe and the US. And I was listening to the Univar call yesterday, and they did call out a few things that maybe weren't so sustainable for the rest of the year, given the market tightness. So is there anything that you're seeing that would give reason not to necessarily extrapolate this sort of profitability that you delivered in Q2, I guess, particularly given there is some seasonality to your business? Thank you.
Yeah, I would say that as far as the margin percentage is concerned, that there is, let's say, seasonality. It is clear that our margin percentage fluctuates. Depends on the mix. Depends on certain aspects in the market. So that could fluctuate also in the future, as it has done in the past. How and when is very difficult to predict. As you know, we are in specialties, so I'm not totally sure if we can compare ourselves in that respect to Univar, which is, of course, a little bit more skewed to commodity. So our margins are relatively stable, but with this fluctuation element in it. So I can't promise that they will stay forever at this level or go, may go higher, may go a bit lower, but we are, of course, a very margin-focused organization, and we hope that we can, and we are constantly also working on improving them by offering our services, by being relevant to our customers, and let's see if we can sustain them.
Can I ask a follow-up question around pricing? And forgive me for dumbing down what I know is a very complex and diverse portfolio. But can you just explain to me your approach to pricing? I was under the impression that a lot of your supply contracts have fixed annual pricing. How much flexibility or frequency do you review the price you are in turn charging to your customers to capture that market tightness?
Yeah, I think we do not have contracts with fixed prices. So our suppliers determine, let's say, their price to us on a regular basis, and that differs from supplier to supplier. But they are free in most cases to change their pricing to us. And of course, that depends from their view on competitiveness, on let's say on their cost prices, etc. So that is something that we need to be very alert on, because most of the time, of course, these prices go up. So we need to then execute price increases also to the market. That is of course something that we, I would say, work very hard on how to execute that, because that's not always easy, and it's also complicated sometimes, also IT-wise. But we've done that well. So let's say our ability to price the products in the right way in the market, also anticipating on what our suppliers are doing, should be one of our core competences.
And in a very sort of inflationary environment, do you have positive inventory revaluation gains going through your numbers?
Yeah, that could be a bit, but
Basically, Matthew, we don't take speculative positions, so we often buy on the basis of expected demand from our customers. And that means that we hardly have very big positions in, for instance, a specific grade of strawberry flavor, because we expect the customer will buy. And that is because if you do more than 50,000 different products, it would be a very different and difficult game to play. But there could be something in it.
Thank you, guys.
And the next question is coming from Chetan Udeshi, JP Morgan. Please go ahead, sir. Mr. Udeshi, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, was on mute. I just had a question on... Firstly, can you just talk about what you are seeing in terms of demand trends by different end markets, you know, both from a Q2 point of view and also if that has changed at all from 2Q to, say, end of 2Q, just in terms of different end markets within industrial and life sciences, that would be useful. And secondly, you know, it's clear in general, and, you know, I don't want to ask specifically on pricing for you guys, but how customers in general do you think are accepting the price increases? Because it's not only price increases that are going up for chemicals, clearly for a lot of other commodities and products, the prices are going up as well. So in your conversation with customers, do you sense any sort of pushback, concern that this could eventually lead to some sort of a demand destruction in the next few quarters?
Yeah, thank you for these questions. I think on end markets, we can say, if you look at life science and the industrial markets, that particular the demand of industrial markets has been exceptionally high and strong. On the life sciences, we have different markets. If you look at, for example, personal care markets, they have come back since last year, when, of course, there were many, many lockdowns. Not much flying around, and they have come back to a certain level. That's very positive. Food is, of course, a more stable growing market, very nicely growing, but more stable. So I would say if you look at the whole spectrum, then the growth in the industrial markets in this quarter and this half year has been very significant, and I think that is that concurs with what we read about chemical industry reports from chemical producing manufacturing companies as to accepting price increases. That of course is differentiates. I mean, nobody likes to receive price increase. It depends on competition. It depends on the there's an element, of course, also of restocking. There's an element of people really wanting to have the products or needing the products. But what we should do is to be reasonable. We have to explain it why. Because we are in this, of course, for the long term with our customers and our suppliers, and this is not a game of just doing a quickie. I mean, we need to explain it to our customers, and then most of the time we can. So I would summarize it like this.
Thank you.
And the next question is coming from Quirijn Mulder, JP Morgan. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, Quirijn Mulder from ING.
I thought you switched.
No, that you'd lie, but that's okay, fine. Good morning, everyone. IMC, a question on Cygnet. So maybe can you give me an idea about the organic growth of Cygnet in the last year? Maybe you can give me some flavor on that. And with regard to pharmaceuticals, there's somewhat slowed down, as I remember, in the first quarter because of the lack of, flu, I think. So maybe you can give me an idea about the situation with regard to pharmaceuticals, especially with regard to the development of Cygnet.
Yeah, Quirijn, we can't, let's say what we don't do is give individual comments on individual companies. I think, let's say, the general comment that Cygnet performed in accordance with our expectations. And our expectations were, of course, also on the basis of growth, is as far as we can go. So we're very happy with the development with Cygnet. I think on your other question, pharma, as you remember, last year, in particular in the first 6 months, pharma, of course, had strong growth figures. That leveled off a bit, and we, of course, now also have strong growth figures also because of the acquisition. But it is true that generally, let's say, the initial strong growth has become a bit slower. And one of the factors, and I think we mentioned it last time, is, for example, that because of the COVID measures, some other transmittable diseases by shaking hands and hugging, etc., like flu, has decreased enormously. So that decreased also certain medicines there, which of course is a factor as well, and also the postponement of certain treatments, etc. But pharma is, as you know, very stable business, so we're still very happy with what we see in terms of growth, although not as exuberant as last year.
Okay. My second question, final question, is about the lockdown impact in the second quarter. Did you still feel that effect, and were there some costs involved and logistics hindrances and other things?
Yes, so of course also in the Q2 most people worked, I guess, from home in many places or partly from home. That is, let's say, an additional burden on getting orders out as you and handling orders. That's why I also very, very grateful for our people and the work they've done. Also, of course, to our IT people that kept the systems going. On the supply chain, and I think that we are not special there, because we see that also with many of our colleagues, peers, and in other segments of the market, the supply chains are still disturbed. That's an additional burden on our people to get the product at all, and then also or in time, and then to get it in time with customers. So that's not easy, and that remains difficult also during the second quarter. So we have to see when that goes back to normal. So yes, the COVID pandemic has still have let's say a negative impact on costs. Yes, of course, less travel. Compared to last year, I don't think it makes a very big difference. Exhibitions are not taking place yet. So certain positive effects. But compared again to last second quarter, of course, that was also not there. So in that sense, a limited effect.
Yeah, so in terms of cost, it's a limited impact. But in terms of, let me say, if it gets normalized next year, for example, that could enhance further volume growth with some higher costs. Is that a correct conclusion?
I'm careful to predict volume or price next year. I think if the situation totally returns, yeah, then we should do a bit more travel again. But hopefully then that results also in new business. So we will hang on to our strategy and growth perspective, Quirijn.
Okay, thank you.
My apologies, Mr. Mulder from ING. And the next question is coming from Fernand de Boer, De Groof Petercam. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I had one question on the other income line, which seemed to be exceptional high in my view. Anything specifically to mention there?
Yeah, I think what you will find there is the proceeds of the sale of the nutrigranulation business in the U.S. And that drives the other operating line a bit up.
But if I look at, let's say, the adjusted figure, because you gave a non-recurring figure of, I believe, only 1.6 million. So that still should leave then quite an amount in that other income, which is then in, let's say, the adjusted figure.
Yeah, so to be very specific there, what you can find in the consolidated cash flow statement is a one-off other operating income of 6.2 million positive, and that is mainly related to the sale of the nutrigranulation business. And the number that you refer to is the balance between extraordinary income, so one-off income and one-off cost, and the one-off cost then relate to M&A activities, restructurings, and all these type of one-off items.
And maybe, yeah, to come back on, let's say, the second half, because expecting a higher EBITA after plus 52% organically in the first half is of course, in our view, obvious. But if you listen also, I listened yesterday to the call of DSM, and there on their, let's say, engineering business, they were quite cautious. Because of all the disruptions, they say, okay, there is demand, but we are not sure, and that was actually the end message, we can deliver. How does that work for you? How can you be sure that you are going to deliver the demand the companies are going to need in the second half?
No, we can, of course, never be sure, because of we are one of, let's say, customers, I would say, we don't say that, but distributors of also of DSM. So we can never be sure. Nevertheless, because of, I think, the wide variety of products that we have, that very often levels out. So we are, not dependent on one product range or one product line. So that helps a lot. I think the situation will not, as far as I can see, worsen in the second half versus the first half. I hope that it improves a bit, but we will see. So I don't think that there will be a major difference in the second half versus the first half.
And then maybe to come back on the very first question on your, let's say, capital allocation. And looking for acquisitions, could there be a point that you say, apart from acquisitions, we're also going to return money? It's been quite easy for you also to raise capital in the past few years. So maybe to put it the other way around and to return more to the shareholders.
No, I think we are not at that at that point. I'm also not greatly in favor of that. I think that we need to execute our strategy, I think. Shareholders have benefited from that and will benefit in the future. We have sufficient opportunities to use our cash and our balance sheet. No, I don't think that is on the agenda at all.
But does that also then mean that you are going to look for more bigger acquisitions or for more acquisitions, more smaller ones?
Well, listen, we are looking at acquisitions, whether or not they fit into our strategy, and whether big or small. And as you know, we always have done a number of smaller ones. If we have the ability to acquire a bigger one or bigger ones that fit into what we do, and we stick to our, let's say, core of specialty chemical and food ingredient distribution, yeah, then we will do that. But we let's say we are not. I think when we were listed, we were asked how much are you going to spend on acquisition, and we have not given that number, and we don't know it, because what we do is execute our strategy. So we do not deviate from that course, and so far, I would say that it has served us well, and it has served shareholders well.
Indeed. Thank you.
And the next question is coming from Henk Veerman Kempen. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good morning, all. I got disconnected for a bit, so I hope I don't repeat any of the other analysts. But three questions from my side. Firstly, has stocking from clients in the second quarter, has that in anticipation of price increases, did that have any material effect on the volume growth in the second quarter? The second question is on shortages. I know that you're very diversified across products and across markets, but I'm wondering if that has been sort of a bigger theme as the quarter and a half year proceeded, and if that could have any effect on the remainder of the year. And then the third question is on, I think you already commented briefly on continued travel restrictions, but do these travel restrictions, and also in combination with, let's say, very strong markets, has that been sort of, does that make it more difficult to engage with potential acquisitions, potential targets?
Yeah, thank you for the questions. I think restocking effect, yeah, certainly that will have, that has played a role. I guess also in combination with, I would imagine, and what we also sometimes hear from customers, let's say the fear of shortages, of course, also triggers them ordering, and maybe ordering a bit more than necessary. I think I answered the question on shortages, so I don't want to repeat myself again. On travel restrictions, sorry, certainly has an effect. I think, fortunately, travel in Europe is more or less possible. Travel overseas is still very difficult, if not impossible, and that I think for all of us in business, has a negative effect, because we need to see our people, and we need to, we can do a lot through the screen, but not everything. And to meet new people and to connect, you need to see people face to face. So certainly that has an effect. On the other side, the world adapts quickly. So also the connection with through the screens is more easy than maybe before the pandemic. But we all would love, and I think I speak for everybody, would love to see the world reopening again and have more opportunity to speak to people. So a lot can be done on the screen. We want to travel again, nevertheless. And let's hope that is in the cards in the next 6 months to 12 months.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions or remarks, please press star 1. And there is a follow-up question coming from Mr. Rajesh Kumar, HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Sorry, I couldn't resist. when you are looking out next year or second half of this year, obviously, healthcare, life sciences, that segment has been reasonably strong and has continued to be strong as we get the recovery in industrials, but also there's a supply shortage which has sort of given a pricing tailwind. Should we think of it like you are at the sweetest spot, and what we see is a bit of tapering of growth in healthcare, life sciences exposure, while you know a bit more coming from the industrials in the second half?
I'm not totally sure if I get your question. Could you? I mean, no, I don't. I don't really get it.
So
sorry.
Life sciences was quite strong last year, and we had a cyclical impact from industrials. We are at that point where both life sciences and industrials are kicking quite strongly. So should we expect second half to be more of an industrial skewed growth rather than
What I said about the first 6 months is that industrial is let's say has shown very significant growth, and I think that you see that also with manufacturers. Yesterday, DSM.
Yeah.
And I think that will probably continue. At the same time, if you look at life science, and they are of course not all the same. And what I said about personal care, that had a very difficult year last year because of the pandemic, and
yep,
that's coming back. So it's a bit of a mixed picture. Let's see how long, let's say, the growth of industrial is continuing. But overall, we see for both bigger segments a very positive development also for the second half.
Got it. Thank you very much.
There are no further questions. Please continue, sir.
Well, then I would say to everybody, enjoy the summer like we do, and enjoy your holiday if you have, and I look forward to speak to you after Q3. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this IMCD event call. You may now disconnect your line. Thank you very much.